There are very few things that investors can do that are free. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, saving strategies, financial planning, topical items of interest, and maybe even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to Free Lunch, hosted by the CM Group. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty to help clients achieve their vision through a deep understanding of what is important to them that requires planning, money, and time. Learn more and subscribe today at markets-work.com.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast for episode 200, Greg.
200. That's amazing.
That is a big number. We started this show back in, I think, May of 2020.
Early in the pandemic.
Well, we had nothing else to do.
That's right.
Couldn't go anywhere. Couldn't do anything except order things on Amazon or Amazon, as I like to call it, which is why I have multiple Amazon subscriptions, Greg, because we ordered so much during the pandemic.
What, they made you have more subscriptions just because you had too much on each one?
When you're ordering toilet paper on Amazon, you had to have different profiles because otherwise they'd block you. That is not true, but just a joke. Anyways, it is episode 200, which I feel is a big accomplishment. And we wanted to spend today looking back at all 200 previous episodes, or I guess all 199 previous episodes. And we're going to spend 10 minutes on each episode. So this will be a Joe Rogan-like podcast
of
hours and hours. No, not really. But just going to list off the most downloaded episodes we've had over the last 4 years and some of our favorite episodes and just spend a few minutes on each of those and call it a day. So here's the list of 9 most downloaded episodes since May of 2020. Number one, If I Had $1 Million. That was our episode 45, I believe. And that was a fun one. We'll get into that. Number two was Talking Energy with Rafi Tamazian of Canoe.
That was a good one. That was a good chat.
It was. Number three was I'm Dead, Now What? That was episode 71. Number four was Armchair Research with Sarah Newcomb from Morningstar. Great guest. Had a lot of fun with that one. Number five was A Buffet of Buffett and Bonds with Alex Herron from PIMCO. That was a fun one. Number six was actually our introduction. It was our first episode. It was introducing the Free Lunch Podcast.
I remember that one.
I do too. And we really sucked at podcasting back then. So I
got to start somewhere.
Number seven was What is a Mutual Fund? That was a fun one to do. Number eight was Talking Trusts with Kat Ratcliffe of Nerland Lindsay, now called LinMac, a legal firm. Number nine was Talking Taxes with Jay Schmidt from JMH and Company, a trusted resource of us.
A regular guest, for sure.
Regular guest, regular presenter. And then some of our favorite episodes would be Dumb and Dumber, which we did just back a month or so ago, and that had to do with the GameStop phenomena. Number two was Lasso's Lessons in Leadership, again, just done a couple months ago. Number three was Yeah, But It's Different This Time. That one talks about the U.S. federal election back in 2020, which is very timely because we're coming into another one.
Hard to believe we're on to the next round here.
And then we've had multiple episodes about factors of return because we believe in them. And the other one that really stuck out for me was My Stocks Are Down, My Bonds Are Down, What Do I Do? And that was 2 years ago, April of 2022. That was a bleak time.
That was a tough year.
So we'll just kick it off here with the first on our list was If I Had $1 Million. And that is a question that I've always thought of because I like the song, but it's a planning question.
It's a planning question. And it was interesting because I think we did a little internal survey of what people would do if I had $1 Million.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot to get the data.
No, don't worry about that.
Okay.
The bigger point being is that this song came out in 1988. So, in fact, one of the things I believe we talked about was, well, if I had $1 million, $1 million isn't what it used to be. So, in fact, just accounting for inflation, if they wrote the song today, they'd have to say, if I had $2.62 million, which doesn't really roll off the tongue as far as the song goes.
Yeah, it's a different number. A different number, but the same number, just with inflation. Inflation, of course, everybody's aware of inflation these days. But yeah, the four main categories that we looked at in that episode were around lifestyle, giving, debt reduction, and investments. And it was a fun episode because we also talked about a book in that episode, and it was The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. You remember there was somebody who had interviewed people in a hospice for a number of years to get this data. And it was interesting to me because when we think of having $2.62 million, or if I had $1 million, we're thinking about today. But when you're at the end of your life, you're thinking about yesterday. And so some of those things that this person identified was things along the lines of, number one, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. It's an interesting one. Number two was, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. That was a very interesting one. And one of the other ones was, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends.
Interesting, because I can relate to that one because I've moved around a fair bit over the years. So I developed friendships in lots of different places. And just because I'm not physically living there anymore, whether it's Vancouver or Toronto, what have you, these days, there's really no excuse for not keeping in touch. Years ago, when there was no Zoom, no internet, no FaceTime, it was tougher. You'd either have to get on the phone or write letters, if anybody remembers what those are. But
when's the last time you wrote a letter?
It's been a long time. But those friendships were important at the time, and there's no reason why they have to end just because you're not living in the same city, for example.
So I guess the point of that episode was, it wasn't all about the money. It was about what you did with it and how you put it to use for yourself.
So yeah, the next one was Talking Energy with Rafi Tamazian. And that was an interesting one because energy is always very topical. Well, when you're living in Calgary, energy is always topical. But for people that question it, because it's such a cyclical industry in terms of from an investment standpoint, I found that very interesting because one of the things that Rafi pointed out is that whereas years ago, energy companies would spend massive amounts of capital for exploration. And that's just not happening as much anymore. The incentives maybe aren't there like they were in the past. And so what's changed, though, is that a lot of the energy companies are actually earning a lot of money, paying down debt, and being able to return a reasonable portion of their sales to shareholders. In fact, I think he described it like an ATM machine spitting out $20 bills, and they're just lying on the floor by the ATM ready to be picked up. So I think what really hit home for me was just the fact that the industry has changed. And there's lots of pressures on the industry with environmental concerns and so on. But the fact seems to remain that demand for energy and oil and gas specifically is going to remain quite strong for the foreseeable future.
Well, the demand for oil globally since 2000 is up 50%. Yet, as you say, we live in an area that is chastised sometimes for being an energy market. And there's a lot of political pressure against energy. But the reality is that in a further developing world, there's going to be a lot of energy.
That's right. And as people in other countries are essentially moving out of poverty into the middle class, the demand for energy just keeps increasing. And yes, alternative energy sources are going to grow and become an increasing part of the total energy consumption, but they're not going to replace oil and gas anytime soon. That seems to be the practical situation.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's move on to the next one, which was episode 71, I'm Dead, Now What? Now, this episode was based off of a book that we've given out to a number of people where you actually write down all the things that are important to you that you want others to know if you're not there to tell your story. I actually just went through this book with my wife, and you write down things like all of the passwords or where to find them for everything that you have, because there's so many different things to worry about. It's not just your Apple purchases, but what about all of your points that you accumulate in various programs? Where do those go? How do people access them? And it all came down to really having, firstly, the three documents ready, and that is the will, personal directives, and enduring power of attorney. You have to have those things in place. This is not a recommendation. This is a demand. You need to have those things taken care of because estate planning isn't just for retirees, which some people think. There are people that are younger that die without a will. And what happens when you die without a will? Well, if you die without a will, in essence, the court decides what to do with your estate. It's probably not what you planned on doing. So I don't want to spend too much time on it other than to say, just get a will done.
That's right. And then as you mentioned, having just gone through the exercise of going through the I'm Dead Now What workbook, when you think about it, and this affects me as well, because depending on how you divide up responsibilities in the household, say, there are lots of things that you do that your wife is not aware of, which is why you're filling out the book, and vice versa. So it's important for everyone to understand exactly how everything works and to share, because you don't know when it's going to be necessary. So from that episode, we'd certainly recommend that people, if anybody is having trouble organizing it, we can certainly help with workbooks and things to get your affairs, not necessarily get the affairs in order, but at least understand what your affairs are and where to get the information.
That's right. And it is interesting you bring that up, that we all have our own roles that we play in our households. If something happened to me, I don't know if Leanna would know where the lawnmower is or how to work it. But if something happened to her, I actually wouldn't know how to empty the vacuum.
There you go.
I actually have no idea. We have a central vac and I actually don't know where it is.
Absolutely. It's a partnership and make sure that your affairs are in order that way. Another popular one was the discussion with Sarah Newcomb from Morningstar. And that was an interesting one. She talked a lot about behavioral economics again, and she has done a lot of research on people's attitudes towards money. It was quite interesting because she talked a lot about how do people develop attitudes towards money, how they're influenced by cultures and our societies, and how we relate to the world, we relate to money, etc., and how these different ideas in behavioral economics and social psychology influence how people think about money. And one of the things she talked about that I really found interesting is she talked about how we tend to polarize, meaning we go binary. There's two options or two sides. We either demonize wealth or we like to demonize poverty, or we like to glorify wealth and glorify poverty. And we do these things quite a bit and sometimes at the same time. And she sometimes refers to some people having a hostile envy towards the wealthy. And that hostility is sometimes manifested or seen as negative attitudes and biases against those people that have wealth. And we see that all the time. So that bias makes people unconsciously judge other people based on their wealth or lack of wealth. So it's just an interesting look at how people relate to money. But then she talks about one of the important things that came out of her research is that we've talked about how investing can be a very frustrating subject for many people because many of us tend to have very short-term views, looking down, okay, what happened in the last month? What happened in the last 3 months or the past year? But investing really is a long-term process, which we've tried to talk about as well. And the better you are at looking down the road and visualizing how your life will look if you take certain steps, whether it's saving and investing regularly for the long term, the more you're able to think long term, the better your outcomes will be. And the more you focus on the short term, the more risk there is in you achieving your long term goals. So it's really a function of being able to visualize long term and then to make financial decisions based on that long term vision as opposed to short term concerns. And certainly in investing, we feel the same way.
Well, that's a great segue into the next most downloaded episode, which was what is a mutual fund? Because a lot of people do look at these things from a short-term lens. And over the years, we've heard things like, well, I don't like mutual funds because I bought one time and I lost money and didn't work out and fees were too expensive or whatever. The reality is that there's different types of mutual funds, all types of different types of securities. And not one is exactly the same as the other. There's difference in construction. There's difference in pricing. There's difference in trade frequency. So I always laugh at that answer. I don't like mutual funds because I lost money one time. Because the question just you talked about is, well, what was your time horizon? How was the money allocated? Because we are proponents of being diversified. And mutual funds, if done properly, just give you a good basket of diversified investments.
Well, and I think I relayed this story from my son when he was young and went to a summer camp up at the north part of Calgary one summer. He was at this camp for a week.
Wait, in the summer, he went to a summer camp?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, good. Oh, I got
it. Is that redundant? Am I repeating myself? Am I saying things over and over again?
Irregardless, Craig.
So anyway, it was that farm. What's that farm up north in Calgary where they have lots of animals, the petting zoo and things like that?
I used to know the name.
So anyway, my son was up there for a week, and it happened to be a week when it was over 90 degrees in Calgary the whole week. So it was very hot and probably uncomfortable for a lot of the kids. And the next year we said, hey, what about going back up again for another week this summer at that summer camp again? And he said, no, I don't like it up there. It's too hot. So you can see where he wrongly associated that with it being hot. And likewise with people with mutual funds, they had a bad experience, no doubt, in a very short period of time they bought it and possibly shortly after they bought the mutual fund, it went down. And so I don't like mutual funds because they go down or that thing. And it's just not a logical conclusion, but it happens a lot.
I was just going to say on that note, you mentioned that it was very hot when your son was at this camp. You said 90 degrees. We're in Canada, so that's 90 degrees centigrade.
Oh, so what is that? Anyway, is that 34? It's funny because I can think of room temperature in 20, 21 degrees centigrade, no problem. But once we get to 90, I don't know what that is.
It's just hot.
Is that 32? I don't know. One of the other more downloaded episodes was our very first one, which you mentioned. Welcome to the Free Lunch. And again, yes, relatively, we were completely new at podcasting.
We were brand new. Didn't really know how to turn on the machine.
That's right. Just getting the equipment working was quite a challenge. But we talked about what had changed and what over the years that you and I had both been in the business and what some of the things we've learned over time. And those things that we learned over time happen to be themes that we carry on throughout all of our podcasts. And these were the things that we learned over time. One is that markets work. They always have. And we expect that they always will. And that risk and expected return are related. And we talked about how the fact that a lot of people think, oh, risk and return are related. And that's not true. Because that would mean that if you took more risk, you would get a better return. And that would be the opposite of risk. That would be a guarantee. But it's risk and expected return. You expect over the long run to be rewarded for taking more risk, but you don't always get rewarded for it. And so people have to understand that. Point number two, which is basically the asset allocation, is critical to return and expected return, but also to volatility. Because obviously, if you choose a portfolio with more stocks, it's going to be more volatile in the long run than a portfolio with more bonds or cash. And linking to that, diversification is critically important to ensure that if you are in an all stock or a 60% stock portfolio, that you're diversified across all of the types of stocks that you could invest in, as opposed to just one type of stock like Canadian stocks or dividend stocks and so on. Number four was that passively managed portfolios can outperform actively managed portfolios over time.
That's been proven so many times.
That's right. And all of the research that shows the percentage of actively managed funds, for example, that beat their benchmarks usually is a relatively small number, typically less than a quarter. Number five, learning was that emotions are counterintuitive to investing. If you let your emotions drive your decisions, then the outcome will not necessarily be that good. And again, emotions make us focus on the short term rather than the long term, as we just talked about with Sarah Newcomb's work. So emotions must be controlled in order to be a successful long-term investor. And the last thing is that fees and expenses are an important part of the investment plan and have to be managed as much as possible. So again, key learning from our years in the business and again, key themes in many of our podcasts.
So that was our first episode and we talked about all that stuff. We should have just stopped there.
Yeah, we're done.
We gave all of the advice needed.
That's right. Yeah.
Of course, I'm kidding because we've expanded on each of those points a number of times over the last 4 years. I want to talk about the expense part for a minute. I had somebody recently who sold a position and they had quite a large capital gain in that position. And they're upset that they're going to have this big tax bill to pay. And they said, isn't there a way to not pay this tax bill? And well, yeah, you could have bought something that went down. But I thought the whole purpose of investing was to have it go up. So I know people, they shy away from the tax bill portion. And we try our best to manage that for individuals trying to take advantage of some capital losses if we have them. But sometimes you just got to pay the bill.
Well, that's right. We're in an environment where we have a progressive tax system. And unfortunately, you pay more tax the more money you make. So I guess that's unfortunate or fortunate that if you make more. But the other thing is, as you say, there are ways to mitigate those situations. And very often what we find is that you have these large capital gains that have to be triggered because of an individual stock purchase, let's say. If you have large capital gains accrued in a broadly diversified fund, there may not be any need to sell that fund other than if you have a need for cash flow, possibly. And a lot of large equity funds also can be quite tax efficient if they don't have a high turnover, which means there's not a lot of taxable distributions at the end of the year. So there are always ways to manage the tax situation. But no, there's nothing wrong with taking a profit, and particularly if it's necessary for either proper management of the portfolio or if you just have a need for cash.
Yeah, well, in this case, it was to greatly reduce some concentration risk because as much as that position went up, it could easily go down. And that actually leads into episode 86, which was one of our most downloaded episodes, was Talking Taxes with Jay Schmidt from Johnson Morrison Hunter and Company. And Jay shared with us some of the basics. Take advantage of those programs that are available, RSPs, TFSAs. There's the new First Home Savings Account. There's certain things you can do, but at the end of the day, tax avoidance is our goal. Tax evasion is illegal and not what we would recommend. And there are ways to do it to a degree, but once you've maxed out all of those channels, then you can't avoid what tax has to be paid.
I'll just briefly talk about one of the other most downloaded episodes was about trusts. We talked about trusts with Kat Radcliffe, And I think the whole concept is that this was a popular one as in along the same lines as I'm Dead Now What, and that it talks about getting your affairs in order or making sure that you've got an estate plan that's right for you. And basically, the whole discussion about trusts came up because in some situations, if you're possibly a high net worth individual, or you have concerns about your beneficiaries or their spouses, for example, then trusts can be a very useful way to have a little bit more control of what happens with your estate when you're gone. So not everybody needs a trust, but depending on your situation, as you're going through the estate planning process with an attorney, doing the will and all the other important documents, trusts may play a role in that whole decision process.
But there are very specific reasons.
Very specific.
Yeah, they're not for everybody. But no, that was a good episode. Well, let's talk about some of our most favorites in our last 3 or 4 minutes here. Do you have the first one?
Well,
sure.
Yeah, one that we also did relatively recently, Dumb and Dumber Money. And really, we just revisited the whole GameStop episode, the Wall Street bets situation that happened a couple of years ago. And really, just to talk about how this was a situation where lots of retail investors got together through the power of social media and decided they were going to stick it to the man in this case being hedge funds who were actually shorting shares of GameStop in this particular situation. And they accomplished their goal by pushing up the price of GameStop. They forced these hedge funds to realize significant losses by having to cover their short positions. Essentially, they sold stock at a low price and they had to buy back the stock at a high price before they were wiped out entirely. And there's a lot of retail investors that made some good money when GameStop went from $8 up to $400 or whatever the range was. But in the end, there was a whole lot of investors that would have paid $400 for GameStop shares, which then promptly went down to much lower levels. And so in the end, yeah, some people made some good money while they were sticking it to the man, but there weren't a lot of winners. In the end, there was a lot of losers. The hedge funds lost and many retail investors lost because they got in too late and got out too late. So not a great outcome.
Yeah, and what that episode reminds me of is something we've talked about many times is that for every winner, there's a loser. Every time there's a trade, there has to be a buyer and a seller. Somebody's given up or somebody sees opportunity or something like that. So anytime you hear this phrase, there are more sellers than buyers in the market today because the market was down, it's just not true. It can't mathematically occur.
And it really comes down to who's more eager, the seller or the buyer.
Another episode, one of my favorites was, what was it? Episode 193. So not that long ago, we did Lasso's Lessons in Leadership, referencing the Ted Lasso show. Are we recommending people watch Ted Lasso, Greg?
Absolutely.
It's a fantastic show. So here are some reasons on how leaders succeed or how they don't succeed. And there's 8 of them. This is how they don't succeed in change. Number 1, not establishing a great enough sense of urgency. This is a critical mistake. Number 2, not creating a powerful enough guiding coalition. In other words, you need people with you. Number 3, lacking a vision. So we've all been in jobs or in groups where there's no clear vision as to what the group's trying to accomplish. Number 4 was under communicating the vision by a factor of 10. So maybe there is a vision, but it's not being communicated effectively. Number 5 was not removing obstacles to the new vision. Number 6, not systematically and planning or creating short-term wins. You always hear about these things like stretch goals, whether it be in investing or in business. You actually have to create short-term wins rather than focus on stretch goals. To your point of being invested, a short-term win could mean just staying invested during a bear market. That's a short-term win because bear markets are shorter term in nature. And number 7, declaring victory too soon. That's a big one. So that could be the GameStop as well. The minute the stock went to 400, you saw all these happy people with all their diamond hands. Not going to sell it.
That's
like people with paper hands. If you don't recognize that reference, go back and listen to that episode. And number 8 was not anchoring changes in the corporation's culture. So why am I spending so long reading all those out? Because I think that they're super important. And that episode really resonates with me. So I hope you'll listen to it.
And let's finish off with, I'm going to combine 2. One was, yeah, but it's different this time, back in September of 2020, in the lead up to the last US election. And my stocks are down, my bonds are down, what do I do? That was back from almost 2 years ago in April 27th of 2022.
Well, they're kind of the same theme.
They are the same theme. And I think what struck me is, so we now have the benefit of hindsight yet again. So back in April of 2022, interest rates were starting to climb at a very rapid pace. Increasing interest rates can be very damaging to stocks, because companies have higher costs of operating and therefore lower profit margins. It can be devastating to high growth stocks like technology names, whereby these companies are trading at very high multiples to their earnings. And with a higher discount rate, it means that their earnings, basically the price, will likely go down as you discount the future cash flows many, many years in the future. So rising interest rates can be bad for stocks, can also be bad for bonds, because we know that when interest rates go up, then bond prices can come down. But when you start from a very low level of interest rates, which we were prior to 2022, where the 10-year bonds were, let's say, 1% or something, then the effect of rising interest rates is much more dramatic than it would be if yields had started at 5% rather than 1%. So the impact of rising interest rates becomes very dramatic. So we had both stocks and bonds going down, and that led to all sorts of people saying, well, diversification doesn't work anymore. The 60-40 portfolio was dead. And here we are a couple of years later, and we know that, okay, 2022 was a horrible year. Bad for stocks, bad for bonds. But all you had to do was not give up, not capitulate, and 2023 turned into a very good year. Now, you had to wait until October, so you had to wait till almost the end of the year to really get a nice run-up in your stocks, which did run up very nicely, and to get a recovery in bonds. Bonds earned anywhere between 6 and 8% in 2023, which by any measure is a very good year for bonds. So again, it wasn't different. It might have been a different cause that resulted in stocks and bonds going down in value. But as usual, and has happened essentially always in history, the price of stocks and bonds recovered and now have gone on to set new highs again. So it wasn't different.
So what you're saying is hindsight is 2022.
Exactly.
It's one of my favorite sayings. The other saying I heard the other day was they don't call it 2023 anymore. They call it November and December because all of the return came the last 60 days. Well, listen, Greg, I've had a blast doing this with you. We've got, as I say, it's our 200th episode together, most of those together. I've had a few guests here and there, but it's been a lot of fun and looking forward to the next 200 at least.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
Okay, well then, here's to 200 more.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by the CM Group. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to markets-work.com. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast. The CIBC logo and CIBC Private Wealth are registered trademarks of CIBC. If you are currently a CIBC Wood-Gundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Private Wealth consists of services provided by CIBC and its subsidiaries, including CIBC Wood-Gundy, a division of CIBC World Markets, Inc. CIBC Private Wealth is a registered trademark of CIBC used under license. Wood-Gundy is a registered trademark of CIBC World Markets, Inc. Colin Andrews and Greg Kaminsky are investment advisors with CIBC Wood-Gundy. This information, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. CIBC and CIBC World Markets, Inc., their affiliates, directors, officers, and employees may buy, sell, or hold a position in securities of a company mentioned herein, its affiliates, or subsidiaries, and may also perform financial advisory services, investment banking, or other services for or have lending or other credit relationships with the same. CIBC World Markets, Inc. and its representatives will receive sales commissions and or a spread between bid and ask prices if you purchase, sell, or hold the securities referred to above. CIBC World Markets, Inc. 2024.